podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Total Scoopers Podcast. My name is Simo. Today I'm joined by Billy. Say hello, Billy.
Mate, you all right?
I'm all right. Jakey boy, how are we doing?
I'm very well, thank you.
No microwave this time.
No microwave this time.
watch out for whenever Billy or Jed posts that clip. That was a funny intro. We had a little unplanned vacation, boys. We didn't podcast for a little bit. This happens maybe once, twice, three times a year for the screamers. But we're back. We're back. And we're coming with a prem review, a little bit of a different format now. Rather than just going through every game individual, we're just going to talk about our own topics, right? The topic I'm bringing to the table this week is Leeds United. Jesse Marsh, I'm not sure where he's had his last stand yet. As far as I'm aware, he's not been sacked yet. I'm right in saying that?
Yeah, he's
I've not heard anything.
There's a curse, you know what I mean?
Unless
you know,
it's when you come into the past 30 seconds.
Yeah. It's happened before when we've started the podcast. And news is vastly different from when we've started, right? Okay, so Jesse Marston, I thought that might be his last stand. Although, I am seeing so I kind of went on to Twitter to kind of see the general fans' reaction. If not football Twitter, just the general fans' reaction to it. And I think, it's strange to say, there's still quite a lot of Leeds fans that are in the camp of still being a supporter of Jesse Marsh in terms of they think he is getting probably what you could get out of those players, you know, and feeling maybe there'll be a new manager bounce if there is a change of leadership. But I think I find myself on that side of the fence of, you know, he is a good manager. I think he's a good manager. He's obviously quite emotional and there's things he needs to really work on if he's going to be in the Premier League. But I think if they play decent football, Leeds, the game that I watched at the weekend against Fulham, it was just stupid mistakes. These big goals, they conceded just all really, really preventable, you know? And when you push them back, they just look like it's terrible defending. But Leeds didn't defend all that bad for the match. It was just individual moments of madness. I think it's just because they play with so much intensity and emotion that they kind of do let themselves switch off, you know? And I think when it comes to defending, sort of calmer heads prevail, don't they? You know, it's all about sort of you know, being in the zone and watching out for these things. Like, you know, players finding, you know, 6, 7, 8 yards, 9 yards of space and the 6 yard box is just, or just outside the 6 yard box is just, it's not on. There's actually a moment where the cross comes in and a fullback strike, I think it is, hard for the old Scottish tongue. I think he was playing fullback or whatever, and he turned round, I think expected to see his centre back and just seen yards of space and then attacking Fulham player, which was quite funny, I thought. But I think more time. I think till January. I honestly don't know if I see another manager coming in and vastly changing things and getting way more out of these players than Jesse Marsh is getting. And there's a subject we're going to come on later about managers getting the best out of players and players performing once said manager is gone, Billy boy. But we'll get to that. I wanted to get your thoughts, boys. Where do you land in the camp of sort of do Leeds need a change of leadership? Jake, I'll come to you first.
It's a good question. I don't know. I think what Leeds need more than anything is a striker that can score, because Patrick Bamford just isn't that. I think, I can't remember which group chat it was of ours, where I think someone put a stat in where the most number of big chances missed was Bamford or something this season, and he'd only played four games. And I think that was pretty...
I think
pretty,
it was last season, actually.
Last season,
he played three games, yeah.
Yeah, and it was pretty damning. It was a pretty damning statistic. And I think for me, that's where a lot of their problems also lie, you know. If you can outscore teams, obviously you're going to beat them. And Leeds though, this year, they don't have stability either at either end of the pitch. They can't score and they can't defend. The question I have is, you know, if they do sack Jesse Marsh, who comes in? You know, it's a tough old footballing world out there. Maybe someone like a Sean Dyche goes to Leeds. You know,
it's the prevailing name. It's the part I didn't come on to yet. Sean Dyche is the prevailing name of a section or a certain level of amount of fans, that do want that massive. I think the massive panic mode for Leeds fans is the ended up in a Championship.
Yeah, that'd be a catastrophe for them if they went down again.
Well, I think the players are on wages now that are Premier League wages, and I don't know if there's any clauses for reduction of, or they'll need to do a bit of a clear out if they do go down. I think in my prediction I had Leeds going down, you know. I don't know if they've got the players they need to stay up, you know.
That's something that I always said about after Bielsa went. The players knew how to play one system, and that was Bielsa's system.
There's plenty of Championship players in the Bielsa side. I know that's the side has improved, you know, in areas in the pitch, but there was talking about managers getting everything out of players. I think Bielsa was getting 160% of ability.
Yeah.
You know, he was getting some Premier League level performances, not every week, but out of players that were quite clearly, you know, Championship level players.
Absolutely.
And some of them still pepper the squad.
Yeah, and I think that's the problem alongside the stature that Bielsa had at Leeds. It was impossible for anyone to come in and not struggle because of just what he did for Leeds as a football club, Leeds as a city, Leeds United as a community. Just everything that that man did is just, he's God level, isn't he, at Leeds now? And anyone was going to find it hard, not only because of the players, but because it's not Marcelo Bielsa.
It's a big act to follow. Yeah,
it's huge.
You know, it's like going after Wenger. It's like going after Sir Alex Ferguson. And I know that's crazy comparisons, but in terms of like how a fan base, the level to it, or like how much they, you know, like adore a manager, that is to the level that Bielsa was at Leeds. Clearly, there's no argument against that.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the major problems, really. Whether not necessarily a problem for Jesse Marsh or anything like that, but it's the fans. It's probably more so the fans' problem because they've got this level of this God level figure that's just left the club. No one will ever be able to fill that role. You've seen, look at United and Arsenal when Wenger and Sir Alex left and how they dropped.
Yeah.
It took Arsenal a long time to recover. Man United are still in that.
Still are, yeah.
You know, still in that,
that's,
you know.
That's the thing. Maybe it's not going to be quite as severe as those two clubs. And by that, I mean Leeds United probably won't be going back down to the Championship. But if they're not careful, they could do, you know. Mm. Like these United and Arsenal were Champions League status clubs for yonks for a long, 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 long time. Those two managers leave and all of a sudden it's fighting for Europa League.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily think that that'll happen to Leeds. I don't think that they'll go down to the Championship. But like I say, if they're not very careful, they will do. You know, for a club to still be relying on Patrick Bamford in their third year in the Premier League.
Yeah, it's damning, isn't it?
It's massive. And the fact that he's been injured for the whole of last season.
Terrible.
He's been injured for a lot of this season. And they still haven't got a replacement for him. You just need someone else of even a similar ability. You don't have to be going out there spending 20 million on a strike or anything. You just need someone in who can score goals and put the balls in the back of the net, which is where they've ultimately been. That's their biggest problem, Leeds, this season.
I totally agree. I mean, Rodrigo, I think he's done a fine job, done a real fine job coming in.
Had a fantastic start to the season, didn't he?
Yeah, and a lot of the good work he did, and as an individual player, is the reason why Leeds aren't, like, you know, floored on the table, you know, absolutely is down to, you know, his good work. I think he did a really fantastic job. Obviously, he's not an out-and-out number nine, but he came in with a lot of desire, and, you know, he's a top professional, I think. But, you know, he is 30 years old. He's a player kind of, I would still say, playing out of position, you know? And you need that sort of, like, you need that sort of linchpin up front, you know? The clubs that are going to succeed are clubs that are having, you know, out-and-out sort of strikers that they're able to rely on. And Patrick Bamford, I think, it's not even an ability thing. I think he could get better. I think he's at an age where he probably could get better. His injury record, man, you can't have that. An injury record like that. It's not like, see with Danny Ings at Southampton is an example I always go to, because, like, even with his injury record, he was getting 15-something goals a season, you know, 15, 16, and that's enough to keep Southampton up, right? And this isn't a conversation about Southampton, but I think they need a striker that they can look to that's going to be...
Yeah.
And I don't think Bamford is... Unless his injury record completely turns around and he has a full season, then, you know, I just don't see it.
Mm. Yeah, and I think the thing is, you mentioned Rodrigo just there. They paid, what, 20, 30 million for him? And I don't think he's scored over 10 goals a season in his whole career. Like he's they brought him in as a that number nine that can kind of play a bit of anywhere, but he's not a goal scorer. And his stats,
I think they had him in mind as a sort of like a wide
career.
Forward. He was, I think he was brought in the mind to like play behind Bamford and like a 10 or like play out on the left or the right, you know?
Yeah, but all of a sudden Bamford gets injured.
Yeah, and he needs to be through the middle.
Where you are. Yeah. And that's the, like I said, that's the, as we all know, that's the big problem for Leeds. And they need that to, January needs to come. And the first thing without, they should already be looking and sounding out strikers now. Mm-hmm. Because the January 1st comes round, they need that player in the door as soon as possible.
Yeah.
See, if I was them, I would be looking at Broha at Chelsea. I would look at him. He did a really good job at Southampton last season.
Did he sign a new deal though?
I think he did, but I think they're probably still open to him going out. I mean, Graham Potter
even
is trying to kind of use him.
Loan or something.
Yeah, something like that. Something
you
like
just
minutes,
need
you know.
Something to get you through this season. Get to the summer. Just kind of keep them up. That's the thing for Leeds now. You need to keep them up. So a 6 month loan for someone like Brozier, where he's going to be playing
even you look at Newcastle and you're like, okay, Chris Wood did a job for Newcastle, really important job at Newcastle in terms of like contributing to like the turn. At Newcastle, you know, you think, oh, well, that's 5 to 10 goals, and it's not over 10 goals, but it's 5 to 10 goals. That's a big amount of goals when you're...
Especially after January.
Exactly. Yeah. Especially because we don't know where they're going to be. And I said things could turn around with these because they've got a lot of cracking players, wide players in particular. I think, you know, like Jack Harrison, you know, a really good prospect. They get some really good players through the middle as well. You know, Sam Greenwood is, I think, a bit of prospect. That Joe Geltart is not quite there yet, but might be in 2 or 3 years.
I think Somerville as well. He seems to be quite,
Somerville did the new number 10.
He scored as well, I think, didn't he?
Feyenoord, I think he came from. He looks a really good player. He actually did some good work when he came on against Fulham at the weekend. But I'm just not sure. It'll be definitely interesting for sure to see it pan out. And I think January is key for Leeds because I think they could find themselves in a wee bit of trouble if they don't sort of bolster this squad in certain areas. Billy, I've got to come at you next, mate. And your topic is...
Mighty Aston Villa.
The mighty Aston Villa.
Yeah, we got rid of the Liverpool legend, finally, about time. And, I mean...
And what happened after the left?
We've only just got one of the top... Whether you want to call him elite or not, that's up to you. But he's a top, top manager, isn't he? I mean... And then, obviously, I think you was probably referring to the 4-0, weren't you?
Yeah, I was.
But yeah, it just shows what playing to the players' strengths does, putting them in a simple formation where they're allowed to express themselves. And look what happens. We've had these players, Buendia, Danny Ings, Ollie Watkins, Leon Bailey. These are top players. Like, they are very, very good players.
Yeah, they're great
for the fact that Gerrard could not get anything out of them at all. Now, we would attack teams and we were void of ideas. How can you be void of ideas with a front four, four attacking players like that? You add Coutinho into that as well. Jacob Ramsey, Cameron Archer, the youngster coming through as well. How are we not scoring goals?
Did the players down tools? That's a question.
100%.
Did they down tools? 100%. There's an argument for it. I think probably
some of the performances were shocking.
They were. Yeah, and I can understand the argument of some people saying that they down tools, but you look at that game the first half anyway, against Chelsea, and how good we were then.
Yeah.
And then the games following that and just before that, you know, the game, let's take it back to the Man City game and how good we were against Man City. The game after that against Southampton has gone down as one of the most boring games in Premier League history.
For sure. I watched that game, I think I put it in the chat. And not a good time.
Exactly. The game after that was Leeds and we couldn't break down 10 men leads. We couldn't.
10 men are hard to break down, though.
They are, yeah. But
notoriously struggled against 10 men.
But outside a couple of performances, Aston Villa haven't really broke down anybody, really.
Mm.
And this was the problem, you know. You've got those attacking players, and how can you not break down teams? You know, he was saying in his press conferences after the game that we need the players to stand up and bring a spark to the game. I'm sorry, but that spark should be coming through your tactics as well. Like, both of you should be held responsible for this. And I can understand why people say that it's on the players and stuff like that. But just look at what playing to the players' strengths does and dropping the out-of-form players. McGinn's not been performing for 18 months now, if not longer. You drop him and we look good in midfield, you know? You put Bailey on the wing. You put Watkins on the wing. Take the pressure of goal scoring away from Ollie Watkins. Stick him on the wing. Let him run at players. Let him cause havoc. And look what happens. You know, you've got a prolific goal scorer in Danny Ings through the middle. Look what he does. Scores two goals. That was one
gripe I always raised for you. Just, I'm like, find Danny Ings. Find him wherever he is on the pitch. You know, if he's near the box, find him. If he's in the box, fucking find him, you know. and the goals will come, you know.
Exactly. And another thing that got me is with Gerrard anyway, was the lack of playing time that Emi Buendia got. Every time he came on the pitch, he looked like he was that spark. And he was that player he was the best player on the pitch whenever he came on. Yet he was only getting one start and then he'd be dropped for Coutinho again. And then he wouldn't start again for another 5-6 games. You're like, this is a player that whenever he comes on, he's coming on pretty much every game, if not for certain every game. And he looks like the best player on the pitch. How can you not give him a run of games to impose himself, show you what he's about? You know, you've got Coutinho who's not scored or assisted. He's got one goal or assist in the past 20, 22 games, something like that. I mean, come on. Like, Buendia was so much better than him. Every single time he came on, he would be the one to somewhat lift us a bit and we'd look exciting again. But yeah, it just wasn't meant to be. That it was really, really boring football. But I think just going back, I know I've gone back a couple of times to the players down in tools, and you look at those performances against Man City and Chelsea. And how can you say that they down tools during those games? We looked so good. We could have quite easily beaten both of those teams. And that's not me being biased. I'm not exaggerating or anything like that. Man City were there to be beaten against them. Haaland being Haaland and De Bruyne being De Bruyne, putting in a fantastic ball and Haaland being in the right place. The other 90 minutes, Haaland was in Tyrone Mings's pockets. Like, he was nowhere to be seen. Yes, Emi Martinez pulled off a few decent saves as well. But then against Chelsea, like, Leon Bailey running at Mark Cucurella. I've never seen Mark Cucurella look so baffled as to what he was doing on a football pitch. Bailey was spinning him all over the place. And he looked really, really good. But then you stick him against Nottingham Forest or Leeds or Southampton or Fulham, and he's like, he's half the player that he was. Mm. And at some point, it has to go down to the tactics, and we had to be really careful because, you know, we needed that manager bounce. And that first half against Chelsea is, in my opinion, what gave him the Fulham game.
Mm.
And I mean, for me personally, after Forest, that was it. He should have been gone. We were horrendous again against Forest. That should have been it for me. Give him. Look, for Chelsea game's a free hit. I've said this so many times. Chelsea game is a free hit. If you get something out of it, fantastic, but you're not expected to. That you look at the fixtures at the beginning of the season, you see Chelsea's name and you put in a loss there. Same as Man City, Liverpool. I've been over it 1,000 times.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a free hit. That then gives us time to regroup and find a manager. And then his first game is Fulham.
Yeah.
And then you've got Brentford. And then you've got Newcastle, and all of a sudden this bounce is gaining momentum. I think we did leave it a little bit too late to get rid of him, but I mean, look at the bounce that we got at the weekend.
Yeah.
It was massive, and it was such an important 3 points as well, because we were looking at a relegation battle. If we'd have lost that game, we would have been deep in a relegation battle, and you can argue that we still are. It's still very tight down there, but all of a sudden we've got a good proven top quality coach coming in who plays a decent style of football, who can play to these these players' strengths. And I, for one, am really, really excited as to what Unai Emery can do at Aston Villa. It's all of a sudden, you've got a positive buzz around the place. You know, we've got off the pitch anyway, when Gerrard was here, it was very positive, as in growing the Aston Villa brand, because we've doing a lot of stuff down in Africa. We've opened two academies in Africa. Already a lot of interest, apparently. We're setting up, or the owners are setting up, to be the 30th club in the MLS, the Las Vegas Villains. You know, so we're expanding, and we're growing, and we're trying to grow worldwide. But the performances on the pitch weren't there to match the positivity of,
I think, the off the pitch stuff. Everybody at Villa, from, I mean, hierarchy, maybe not the players, but including Gerrard and his coaches, I think everybody just wanted it to work. I think everybody was like really 100%. Desperate to work it.
There was nothing more than I wanted. You know, we sat here after the first loss against Bournemouth.
You backed him for a long time.
Yeah, I think we really needed to give him some time. You know, calling for his head after one game is just pathetic. It's an absolute joke. But after zero improvement, after 9-10 games, I'd really lost patience, and we were only going one way, and that was down, unfortunately. And I'd have loved nothing more than for him to turn it around, and for him to be the one to almost Arteta it, if you like, to push us push us forward, to turn that the toxicity around Aston Villa, turn it around, and to push us forward. And it just didn't happen, unfortunately.
He's missed the Europa as well, hasn't he? And I am. You must be thinking, oh, do you know what?
Some piece of silverware has got to come to Villa Park soon, surely.
Do you know what? Yeah. I actually kind of do rate Unai Emery. I think he got a hard time at Arsenal. And I think the way he reacted after that, you know, with Villarreal and Sevilla, just absolutely, you know, proved everybody
what he's done for Villarreal. I mean, with all due respect, it's a tiny club. It's a tiny town. That's all it is. It's not even a city. It's a tiny town. And what he's done to that club on limited funds as well is just unbelievable.
He's been so shrewd in the transfer market as well, isn't he? He's just like picking up players that you think are kind of, forgive me for using a football Twitter term, picking up players that seem a wee bit washed and just kind of, you know, making them out like, do you know what I mean?
Anyone who could get a tune out of Juan Foyth deserves a lot of credit.
You're right
for Spurs. Yeah. He was horrendous.
Oh god,
and Coughlin as well. He's got a job out of him and all.
Coughlin, Lo Celso as well.
Lo Celso was one I was going to.
Kapuwe. There's quite a few of them.
Yeah, I was mental. Like seeing Kapuwe playing in like a European Cup. This guy fell upwards, you know. cracking stuff. Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what Unai Emery can do. Villa, thanks very much for that, Billy. We're going to talk a little bit about horrendous at Forest, and I think that was a good link to Jake. He's going to talk a wee bit about Liverpool and the woes and worries at Liverpool recently.
Do I have to?
Yeah, you have to.
No. It's been an up and down season already. You know, we're however many games in, and we've had four defeats, but it feels like it's been 14. Like it's been one of those seasons where it's just been so. I don't even know what's gone wrong. I sort of do know what's gone wrong. It's pretty much exactly the same squad as we've had for the last 4 or 5 years, and I think that's one of the big issues. The players that we've brought in, I think, have done well. I think Nunes, for all the criticism, unfair criticism that he gets, I think he's settled in really well at Liverpool. He scored his 5 or 6 goals. I think he's actually scored the same amount of goals as Gabriel Jesus, who's been lauded as a revelation for Arsenal. And Nunes has scored the exact same amount of goals, but he's a flop. So work that one out.
It's one of them. It's like one team's top of the league. You know, it's kind of a lot more leeway given the old Jesus. By the way, I mean, I must say, Jesus has been fantastic. I'll play devil's advocate here. He has been absolutely fantastic.
Oh, no, I'm not disputing that. I think he has been great. I think Nunes has been good for Liverpool.
Praise them both without knocking one of them.
Absolutely. Exactly that, yeah. Billy. I think, but for me, the problem that lies with Liverpool is when Thiago doesn't play, neither do Liverpool. And it really is that simple for me. He was meant to play against Forest. I believe he had an ear infection, was what I heard. And it was 5:30 in the morning that they decided he wasn't playing that game. I mean, it must obviously knock Klopp's system out the window, you know, 6-7 hours before kickoff. You've got to completely change your plan. I imagine it was Curtis Jones into that midfield, someone who's been out for quite a long time. And I'm a big fan of Curtis Jones. I really like him.
Didn't have a good game.
He didn't have a good game. But
I'd have preferred the Ox.
It's the Ox
on one leg, I think. I would have been.
I personally would have put Henderson in that midfield, the captain. I don't know why he didn't start in that match.
Well, you're right, you know. I keep going off the fact that, you know, it's now like a 4-4-2 or a 4-2-4. Mm. So whenever I envision the lineup, I always think
yeah.
in those terms now.
But I think another problem, and I just sort of mentioned the midfield there, is Fabinho. His form has absolutely fell off a cliff this season. I don't know what's wrong with that boy, but he looks like he's running in wet in cement the entire time. He's gone from being one of the best holding midfielders in the world to looking like he's never played in the position.
It looks like his first six games at Liverpool.
Mm. Yeah, do you know what? That's a really good point. That is a real. Like I said, he's gone from being one of the best defensive midfielders in the world to looking like someone who's never played in that position. And it was evident the seasons before how pivotal Fabinho was to this Liverpool side, breaking down play, recycling possession. You know, his vision's excellent. So when he would win that ball back and he'd just play a pass through and we'd attack and we'd go on the counter-attack. But this season, he's not been doing any of that. He's not even been getting out of second gear, not in a good way.
I think one thing I used to always associate with Fabinho was like, he's in the right position again. Yeah. He's in the right position again. Yeah. He's in the right position again. He's done a tackle. He's took out three players with one pass.
Yeah.
He's just fucking bang on. And this season, honestly, I just feel like every time a pass goes through our midfield, like our midfield isn't even there, I'm thinking, why the fuck are you standing there? Why are you nowhere near like the opposition, either number 9 or number 10 or even like an advanced midfielder? Like, I just feel like space is everywhere, but I always felt like he was always tight. He was always tight to a player and beat them to the ball, and he's quite tall as well, so he could win a header. And he was always good at tackling on the floor as well, which I don't think is, you don't really want to be on the floor that much as a defensive player, but like when he does, he normally came out the victor. And I just feel like all of that is just, he's just doing none of that stuff. I feel like he's fell off a long way, you know.
He's been fantastic. He's been fantastic, you know, the last four seasons or however many seasons he's been here. He's been absolutely excellent. This season, it's just not working. But then it's not working for the entire team. You can see that. The only person, I believe, there's two or three players, I think, this season who I can say are having a good season. That's Alisson having a fantastic season.
Yep.
And I think Harvey Elliott's having a really good season as well. 19 years old, back into the side. I think for me, he's been one of our most consistent players. I think he's been really good.
Yeah, Bobby Firmino as well, I think.
And Firmino, he's having a bit of a resurgence, which is
he's having a resurgence and nobody knows because Liverpool are so bad. Poor guy, man. It's just,
his contract's he's out of contract in the summer, so I think I'd like to see Bobby get another deal. If he keeps this form up, there's no reason why he shouldn't get another deal.
It's one of them. I'm like, desperate to see Bobby stay at the club. Part of me think, are we just clinging to the past here? Because like that front three of Bobby Firmino, Sadio Mane, and Mohamed Salah at the peak of their powers will just live in my memory for like forever.
Well, it's our generation's Rush Barnes.
You know? Yeah, they were just so good to watch. And I think, like if you ask me at any time, right, you know, should Bobby Firmino get in the contract? He should stay till he's fucking 50 years old, you know? It was same with Manny. Never wanted Manny to go. Never wanted Salah to go. But now we're in a situation where it's Liverpool. I think I seen this stat. It was like when they won the league, they were the second youngest squad in the league. Yeah, now they are
the oldest or second oldest or something.
The 18th in terms of age of first 11 or average starting 11, which is not good. That's not a good thing. I mean, if all those players at the peak of their powers were winning the league and stuff like that, great, whatever. Yeah, totally behind it. But we have an age issue at Liverpool.
I hate to be the I see it on football Twitter or like Liverpool Twitter. It's such a toxic place.
I don't want to bring that toxicity to this opinion.
I see it all the time, and it's depth. And I agree with it, but not the way that they go on about it.
I'm not saying these players are washed. I think they can have a fantastic place in their squad. But my point is...
I do believe we need more depth in that squad, midfield-wise. I think we spoke about it at the start of the season, didn't we? And we said we cannot rely on Keita and Oxlade-Chamberlain as our sort of backup midfielders because it just won't happen because they're not reliable. You're getting 15 games out of the two of them. It's not a dependable, figure.
They're on big money as well.
Adding Henderson's injury problems, which are starting to come in a bit more. There's three players there in a midfield out of seven who you potentially can't really rely on. At least four. Thiago is injury prone. We know that. But when he plays, he's absolutely unbelievable. It's frustrating that I slightly agree with the toxic world of that sort of Twitter. I agree,
but not for the reasons.
But not for the reasons that they because right. they the, just the want to spend Liverpool, $200-300 million.
Are fantastic players, right? All of them to a man on their day, exceptional players, exceptional footballers that have won a lot for this team in the past years. My issue is this aging side is not going to catch Man City or Arsenal. Arsenal have 5 or 6 years on Liverpool to grow. The side isn't catching those teams now, right? And this side, as it is right now, will not get better. Changes are needed. We need midfielders that are not 18, 19, 20 years old. We need 24-year-old midfielders, 25-year-old midfielders. We need forwards that are in that age bracket. We're working towards that, obviously, with Nunes and Diaz, that I could see Liverpool are making actionable moves to get to a place like that. Jude Bellingham obviously takes a midfield place. We could go back to the 4-3-3 system, which is fine. As soon as we put an engine in that midfield, a proper engine, like we had with Gini Wijnaldum, and we had our best success with that engine, just ticking over.
Arguably the player that we potentially haven't really replaced. Thiago,
we don't have a like for Gini Wijnaldum.
To replace Wijnaldum, but he's not the same player as a Wijnaldum.
That was the thing. It was always about like rather than having like three working midfielders and sort of pretty much, let's just say it, defensive minded midfielders. That main focus was ball recovery, recycling the ball, and press.
Play it to the front three.
that was it, and getting the best out of it. That is why you've seen so many goals from Mohamed Salah, Sadio Mane, and Bobby Firmino was because they didn't have a Gerrard type, Lampard. Javi Alonso was a goal scorer, but more of an assister. But a technical player, like a passer. They just had engine fucking constantly moving. Fabinho Henderson running the ball, pressing the ball, recycling it, putting it to creative players like Andy Robertson and Trent, who were getting assists for fun because they were just getting, they were providing all the service. You take one of them out and then the full system, it just feels like you kind of, it's like, to me, it just kind of feels like a Jenga block. You take out that one bit and it just, the full thing back to front, just kind of, that high line doesn't seem as feasible when you don't have three hard-working midfielders in front of it. You know, the Trent isn't getting the ball within the right spaces, I feel, quite a lot of the time. Salah, the amount of times I've seen Salah, like, buy the fucking corner flag this season, is beyond frustrating. It's beyond frustrating.
I think there's quite a lot. You've mentioned that quite a lot, haven't we?
It's the wrong place for him. It's the wrong place for him. And, yeah, there's quite a lot, I think, just... I think... And I'll sound like we just need to be great again. That's what I sound like I'm saying. It's more what I'm more trying to get across is I think we need to revert back to the system that Klopp built and replace the missing links that are now gone. That's what I think.
The thing is, in my opinion, when you've got these players, you're bringing in your Van Dijks and your Fabinhos and your Salahs and your Manes and your Firminos. When you're bringing those in, you're on a build and you're just coming up. That you're there now. Like you are the elite. You are one of the greatest Premier League teams ever of the recent years. You are there with Pep Guardiola's Man City. To stay there, you now have to be getting the Man City type players, the 70, 80, 90 million pound players. You're not going to be paying 50, 60 million for Jude Bellingham to come in. You're going to be paying 100 million plus, probably. Mm. And that's the thing. I don't know whether for a club like Liverpool who don't have unlimited funds, it's a dangerous game that you get into, because you've got Nunes for, what, 85, 90 million now.
Euros.
That's... Yeah, whatever. Same thing.
Isn't the minute.
That used to mean something, Jake.
It doesn't mean anything anymore.
It may be fucking it. I was saying 80 million Bitcoin. Nobody fucking knows what that, for how much that is.
Cheers, Boris. But
getting back to my point anyway. You're spending that much money on one player, and all of a sudden that's the old transfer budget has then gone because it's that one player. I don't know whether Liverpool need to kind of take the stance of, look, we're not going to be competing for the league for a couple of years. We need to take the chance now to properly rebuild like we did, bring in the savvy transfers like you used to that aren't instantly going to give you that league winning impact. You know, it's hard for you fans. You're now used to winning the, not necessarily winning the Premier League. You've obviously won the Premier League, but you're competing for the Premier League consistently.
Yeah. Watching fantasy football is poor.
Exactly. Yeah. That? And I don't know whether it kind of just needs to take a little step back for a couple of years, maybe, and just go, look, the way we need to rebuild as a club, we cannot keep up with the financial power of Man City. We cannot keep spending 60, 70 million on a fullback. We can't do that as a club. We need to rebuild properly how we built up in the first place. And I think that's, while it's a frustrating thing for you fans, like I say, you know, you're used to that kind of football. You're now used to competing for the league. I think that could be the better, more ecological way of maybe going about it. It might be a hard pill to swallow at first, but eventually you'll be back there for another 3, 4, 5 years when you get back there, if you know what I mean.
Hmm. Yeah, no,
that's a good point, Billy.
I agree with you, mate. I think, I completely agree with you. I think we need a year or two where we do rebuild the squad. We, like Simo mentioned earlier, we've started to do that. Jota, Diaz, Nunes, all under 25. Fucking brilliant.
Great.
You know, Trent's still young. Harvey Elliott, Carvalho, you know, there's youngsters in this squad,
isn't it?
It's the midfield that needs a bit of an overhaul.
I think anybody has watched any amount of football can see the issues at Liverpool are midfield issues right now.
Mm. And I suppose if you bring them in now, you've still got those Fabinhos and the Hendersons,
yeah, exactly,
and the Thiagos to nurture them through. I suppose. Just, so that's always going to be a good thing, but
it's just one of the things. It's like some of the players at Liverpool feel like one of a kind players. You know?
Yeah, and that's the thing. That's only because of the way that Guardiola's molded them. Klopp's molded them.
Yeah.
that's the thing. They are one of a kind players because
they
has molded them into one of a kind players.
This is it.
Like, I would love to go and sign 26-year-old Sadio Mane again. I would just do you know what I mean? I would love, like, just go sign 26-year-old Sadio Mane and go get 25-year-old Gini Wijnaldum.
22-year-old Sadio Mane.
And do you know what?
The Southampton Sadio Mane.
Yeah, yeah. Take 5 years off Henderson as well. Take 5 years off Henderson. And tell you what, make Bobby 26 again. And, you know, and we'll be fine.
Do you know what it is, though? I stand by this statement. As long as Jürgen Klopp's at Liverpool, you know, we'll be fine. Everything will come up.
Yeah,
he's the consistency there from start to finish. You know, every trophy that we've won, it's been down to Jürgen Klopp building this side, building this system, implementing this style of play. He's built one team. I think he'll slowly build a second team, which when he eventually comes to leave, that'll be his legacy to hand on to the next person for me. I think this season's a bit of a write-off. We had it the COVID season, finished fourth. And then, you know, the year after we challenged massively for every trophy, you know, got nearly won a quadruple, two out of four. So you know, if we have a bad season this year and then next year we're competing for a quadruple again, then so may it be.
Yeah, that's the other thing with Liverpool. It seems to be a bit of like a trend where you go on that amazing season,
yeah,
and then it's next season it's all right, that's kind of, it's like a recharge your battery season, yeah, and then next season it's let's go again, we're all out. And then it's happened for a couple of years now, hasn't it? That kind of thing.
There's not a huge ins and outs at Liverpool. I don't think we transfer as many players as like the other clubs. You know, I think one of these reasons these clubs could just stay at it every season is they have quite a lot of players outgoing and ingoing as well. And it's kind of like do you know what I mean? This is the same squad, you know, yeah, minus Nunes, you know, this is the same squad from last season. It should be doing better, but it's one of the things.
Well, arguably, you could say it's since from the Champions League final, it's near enough the same squad.
It's the same squad. It's literally the same
since
squad.
When we won the Champions League, it's pretty much the same squad. That's when we won the Champions League.
Obviously, Man City can just kind of go, right, who is the best in the world right now? You, young man, welcome to Manchester City.
you can't compete against that. And that's why the last 4 or 5 years under Jurgen Klopp have been so special because, we have been the underdogs and we have won every trophy there is to win, which is something that Man City haven't done, which makes it so special. And
I don't think that'll last long.
Stranger thing, as long as Yaya Toure's African curse is still going on,
fingers crossed.
Yeah. Do you know what? I'd add a shame into it, you know, like revamp the curse, reinvest in the curse.
Get a new curse going.
Buy one curse, get your second curse free, or half off, or something like that, you know.
Harlan,
I'm going to say it. Like, to finish up, we'll first up on a positive note. I'm going to say it. Like, someone needs to take the hit and just fucking break Harlan's leg. You know, and just go through him, mate. Just like,
after the World Cup, they've got leads. Someone needs to take the
Look
hit.
Ailing. Look, Ailing, when he's done on pace.
You know? Just think, though. On that point, all of our fantasy football teams will be fucked.
He's the one consistent factor of
getting 30 points every week.
It's all right, just take out Haaland and add in De Bruyne. Everything will be normal. It'll be exactly the same.
Right, boys, we're going to end it there. Thank you very much for joining me.
Cheers, mate.
Pleasure as always, mate.
Thank you very much for listening and downloading. Please subscribe wherever you're listening to this, and we shall see you on the next one. Cheers, bye. Sports Social Podcast Network.